Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Heart of a Highlander, a medieval Scottish romance story by Amelia Ferguson. Narrated by Lucy Rayner. Prologue. Darkness. The wan, inky dark of night shot through with flamelight. Broderick McConaway opened sleep-heavy eyes and tried to remember where he was. The light of the dying fire rippled the muscles of his chest as he ran a weary hand down his face. What had woken him? Then he heard the shouts.
Lord, the great hall is on fire!
A guard burst into his bedchamber, eyes wide. Broderick stared at him an instant, uncomprehending, then leaped out of bed.
What?
Aisling, Broderick's wife, sat up, clutching the coverlets to her. Broderick stroked her hand. He looked into her beautiful, terrified green eyes. He tried to reassure her, even while his own heart pounded.
Hush yourself, dear. I'll go and see.
She smiled wanly.
Thank you, dear. Go safely.
I shall.
Broderick kissed his lady wife on her soft red lips, stumbled out of the castle door and into the courtyard, called on by the shouts of his men. He walked into a nightmare scene of smoke, blood, and burning.
My lord!
A man at arms ran to him through the fog. When he noticed he was not a dare, the McConaway, Thane of Dunkeld, but his eldest son, he paused.
Broderick.
Aye.
Help us, my lord. We need to save the people.
Canna we save the fortress?
It's too late. The enemy are everywhere.
Broderick did not want to believe that. He scanned the courtyard, but he could not see through the pouring ink-black smoke. The smoke was everywhere. It stung the eyes, just as the sound of flames eating through the thatch stung the ears. How the fires had been lit so quickly and with no warning, he had no idea. The noise was loud enough now to overwhelm the rest of the sounds. The place was a sea of swords on shields, shouts and battle cries. The battle cries, the worst noise. Not because of the sound. Broderick was a seasoned warrior, past 30, who understood and ignored their intimidation and threats. It was the volume, as if they had no end. So many warriors. They filled the courtyard, swarming into the colonnade and the town beyond. Men in mail and kilts, broad of shoulder and bearing death. Swinging swords, hefting axes, setting fire to the buildings. As he watched, he saw a man in a tartan kilt beat down the door of one of the rooms. He knew the weave of that kilt. Bradley Tartan. The man had found the servants' rooms. Broderick heard cackles, whoops, and then the screams began. A second later, even as he ran toward the castle to prevent it, Broderick saw his worst nightmare realized. Aisling, his wife, had arrived. Her hair, bright in flamelight, streamed back from her brow as she ran. Her back was straight, skin gold in the light of torch and fire. He shouted then, shouted for her to stop, to go back, to run. She had heard the cries too, and had come to save the maids. The whole world was in slow motion. Broderick saw her run at the men who had opened the door. He heard her cry of horror, and then her battle cry. She swung a staff at the nearest attacker as she screamed it. Then he saw the man with the axe. She had not seen him. Standing in the shadows behind her, he raised his axe.
"Aisling!"
he screamed. She fell. The bright hair tumbled into blackness, covered with soot. Broderick was immobile with horror. He could not scream, could not move. The man with the axe wiped the blade free of blood and then ran back to the shattered door, the door Aisling died to protect. The axeman walked inside, intent on plunder, and the screams continued. Screams and blood and fire and death. More death. Each night in Broderick's dreams, the same scene played out. Again and again. And each time she fell. In falling, she had killed Broderick's heart. Each night, he remembered. He also remembered who was responsible. Bradley Tartan. Broderick's family had rebuilt almost everything they had lost, except their men-at-arms. They simply did not have the force to take on their enemies, not when they were backed by powerful allies, the MacAdams. To avenge himself, Broderick would have to find an army. And the easiest way to do that is to wed. Marriages meant alliances, and alliances brought strength. Sitting in his bedchamber, firelight illuminating the furs on the bed in soft orange, Broderick knew he would never love again. His heart had died with Aisling. He could not love his new bride, whoever she would be. Tomorrow he might find out who that was. He had scheduled a meeting with the Earl of Crawley, the most powerful man in the region, who had three marriageable kinswomen, Amabel, Alina, and Chrissy. If the Earl agreed to accept his offer, he would have access to the entire force of men at Lochlin Castle. He would travel there tomorrow. Chapter 1. Dressing for Dinner.
"Must I see another suitor?" Amabel de Mass rolled her eyes.
She heard her younger sister laugh behind her and shot Alina an inquiring look.
"What?" Alina said playfully. "It's going to have to be one of us, and frankly, I'd rather you than me."
She grinned and adjusted the silver fillet that held her dark hair off her brow. Amabel threw a roll of ribbon at her sister, but it missed. They both laughed, though for Amabel, at least, the merriment faded quickly. The two girls were in Amabel's chamber at the top of Lochlin Castle. They were dressing for dinner, where, they had been informed that morning, they would be meeting another suitor. The fourth one in 2 weeks. Amabel hated it. They both did. But there was no escape. Their Uncle Brian, Earl of Crawley, had said it would be so, and there was nothing they could do or say. Amabel looked out through the arched window over the castle courtyard. She could see the tile and thatched roofs of the town of Lochlin stretching beyond their castle's mighty walls. Up above the town, the sky was grey, and she wished, not for the first time, she could take off and fly like the swifts and swallows, escaping this place forever. She sighed.
"Thank you, sister, for your observation."
She turned to Alina with an arch smile.
"I had not expected any enthusiastic takers for the task. Who wants to be a bride for the latest ambitious fortune hunter?"
Alina looked sad.
"Exactly. You are worth more than that, sister."
Amabel felt her throat choke up. Her sister's words touched her deepest hurt, but she would not let herself cry. Not now. She was the Lady of Lochlin Castle since her mother's passing, and she would be impassive and dignified. She inspected her nails distractedly, noticing the gold ring emblazoned with the Swallow of Lochlin. It had been her mother's, and she always wore it now. It seemed an odd emblem, this delicate bird, for her mother's powerful clan. But then she had always considered swallows magical, so it seemed appropriate.
"Well, I'd offer to stand in for ye,"
Chrissy replied from the corner of the room. She stroked tangled bright curls back from her face with a little frown.
"But I'm only the youngest of all us cousins, so I don't think I'd do."
Amabel smiled. "I appreciate the fact that someone wants to, but I am the eldest, and it has to be me." 13-year-old Chrissy, earnestly pretty, with a heart-shaped face, rosebud mouth, and bouncy curls, was the daughter of Amabel's aunt, Frances. Amabel, and particularly Alina, felt fiercely protective of her since Frances died, leaving her an orphan. Under the protection of Lord Brian, Earl of Corley, their ambitious great-uncle.
"Don't offer to marry too soon," Amabel advised her young cousin. "I'm sure your turn will come soon enough."
"Really?"
The girl looked at her with big eyes. She seemed excited at the prospect, and Amabel wanted to weep for her.
"Don't doubt it," Amabel assured her.
Alina's tranquil eyes met Amabel's, and the two older women shared a more serious look. They both understood, even if their cousin did not, the reason for their uncle's insistence they marry soon. He was unstoppably ambitious, and he knew the worth of the three cousins for strategic and territorial gains. Stone-hearted, he would grant their hand to any who would make a good ally. This left all three of them, but particularly Amabel and Alina, the eldest of the great nieces, in peril. They could be married to anyone, absolutely anyone, cruel or kind, likeable or indifferent, bonny or not, at his whim. Anyone who would bring him greatest advance for his ambition. They had already had some near escapes, and were not sure how much longer their luck could save them.
"You have seen three suitors this month, thus far?"
Alina asked levelly. She came to join Amabel at the window.
"Yes,"
Amabel said stonily.
"The Thane of Lennox?"
Alina inquired.
"What happened to him? I thought our uncle had settled on him."
"He was settled," Amabel agreed. "Then, it seems, he decided against it.
If I were to guess, I would say he discovered their lad
was not that well connected."
"Ah."
Alina raised a brow. Amabel sighed. All their great-uncle cared about was ingratiating himself with King Alexander. Everything he could do to cement his influence at court, he would do. Their great-uncle's only child, Cousin Colla, was already married to the Duke of Athol. That gave her uncle enough of a hold at court, but evidently it was not enough for him. The sisters privately wondered if Uncle Brian did not seek the crown.
"Uncle Brian is an ambitious man,"
was all Amabel said now. Alina nodded. She compressed her lips to hide a smile.
"Who is this one?"
"He is no one," Amabel said tightly. She wanted very badly to cry.
"No one?"
Alina inquired.
How can that be? He is some minor thane from some obscure fortress on the eastern borders of our land, Amabel said thinly. Alina stared at her. Amabel rolled her eyes. How could Uncle Brian consider some nobody, even go so far as inviting him to dine? What was it about this nobody that interested him?
What?
Chrissy asked curiously. She was watching them intently, listening in, even as she pretended to search through the box of ribbons on the dressing table.
Well, if we wish to be ready for dinner time and halfway presentable,
Alina replied quickly, I think I ought to untangle that cloud of curls.
To the dressing table with you.
Amabel smiled her thanks. Her sister knew how overwrought she was feeling and had granted her some time to think. Lacing her fingers together, Amabel walked across the long bedchamber and headed for the far window. Looking down over the grey, rain-spotted roofs, she contemplated her uncle's harsh decree. How can he think of marrying me to someone with nothing to recommend him? Why would he do such a thing? Amabel shuddered at the thought of being married to some coarse countryman, someone who could barely count and certainly not write, someone with appalling manners, someone who lived in some draughty hall with the barest amenities. Not only would she lose all chance at love, she would lose everything that mattered most to her. Refinement, beauty, the good things in life. I wish Mother was still alive. Accounts said she was a strong woman. She had all but defied Lord Lachlan when she married their father, the French envoy at court. It was a love match, or so Amabel was told. She wished she could have the same, with all her heart.
And when I marry, I know what I want,
Chrissy was saying proudly, as if she had guessed the topic of Amabel's thoughts.
I want to marry someone like Heath.
Heath Fraser was a fosterling from the McConnells, a small but ambitious clan. He was a year or two older than Chrissy, and she was clearly besotted with him.
I am sure the family would be very encouraging of the match,
Alina said reassuringly.
Truly?
Chrissy frowned, her pretty face crinkled up.
You think so?
Amabel saw Alina sigh.
Yes, dear. But why? Why could I marry Heath, but you or Amabel has to marry someone Uncle says you must?
Alina teased the comb through a particularly stubborn knot.
Well, it's like this. Amabel and I are older, so by the time we are married off, perhaps Uncle will be established at court. You think so?
Yes. Amabel grinned to see her sister so motherly. Alina had assumed the role of Chrissy's mother when Lady Frances died 4 years ago, though there were only 6 years between the two girls in age.
What would you want your husband to be like, Alina?
Chrissy asked. Alina frowned and reached up to adjust the silver fillet that held her hair back. Amabel knew she was giving herself time to think.
I do not know, dear, she said honestly. I do not think much about it.
Chrissy looked horrified.
But, Alina, you must. Why, I think it is all I think about some days.
They all laughed, and Chrissy went pink.
I think I would like someone unusual,
Alina said eventually. Someone who knew himself and who knows his mind. A strong character, but not a feckless sort. A man who spends his time thinking, as I do,
who has strong ideals, a good heart. Amabel blinked. That is a wise answer. Such a man would suit Alina perfectly. Chrissy looked surprised.
But what would you want him to look like?
They all giggled.
What?
Chrissy asked impatiently. Alina rolled her eyes at her and then kissed her fondly on the head.
Never you mind. I don't. Mind, that is, about how he looks. As long as he was kind, wise, and fair of heart, I could not care less.
She finished her cousin's hair, plaiting deftly, and coiling the plaits up with some pink ribbon. Chrissy looked rather confused. After a moment, she shrugged and turned to Amabel.
What about you? What would you want your future husband to be?
Well, Amabel decided to be as broad as possible. I want someone with a brain in his head and boots on his feet. Someone who rides and fights, but who can also talk sensibly about all types of things. Someone who has a practical bent, but who can eat at table without spilling half the contents of his bowl. Bra and strapping wouldn't hurt either. The two women looked at her. Then they burst out laughing. Her sister's heavy-lidded French gaze met hers levelly.
I don't believe a word. I am sure you want more from a husband.
Amabel sighed. There was no arguing with Alina. Amabel was actually very selective, and so far none of the suitors had come even close to fulfilling her hopes.
I doubt this one will be any different.
An hour later, the three women descended the staircase to dinner. Amabel had chosen a dark green velvet gown that hung to the floor, emphasizing her slender, tall body. She was a contrast beside Alina, dark-eyed, dark-haired, and wearing a velvet dress in a blue so deep it could be black. Chrissy, dressed in white linen, her curls plaited and rolled to coils over her ears, walked behind them, craning to see over their shoulders. In the doorway of the dining room, Amabel halted. On the dais, at Lord Lachlan's table, sat a small delegation, two men-at-arms, a monk, and a fourth man. The reason for her pause was the fourth man. He had dark eyes, close-cropped hair, and a neatly trimmed black beard. He wore a black jerkin and trousers, the jerkin tight over his wide shoulders, loose over his trim waist. He looked into her eyes, and she saw his gaze widen, surprise written on his face, and something that looked like fear or wonder. She was not sure which, but it moved her heart. An instant later, the peace was shattered as a man ran, shouting, into the room.
Lord Lachlan, help! We are being attacked!
Chapter 2. A Sudden Shock.
My lords, my ladies, the castle is being attacked!
Broderick McConaway, seated on the dais, heard the shout somewhat dully through the fog in his brain. He shook himself, trying to drag his gaze from the woman opposite him. From the moment he had seen her, he had not been able to look anywhere else. Her rosy, glistening mouth, her wide grey eyes, her sweet body. She stood there like the sweetest images of his dreams and looked at him, pink plush lips parted. From the moment he had seen her, everything else had disappeared.
I didn't think I would ever feel this way.
The strange tightness in his chest, his dry mouth,
All thoughts of meeting his new wife had been of duty and vengeance, not whatever this was. Her uncle had not yet introduced them, but he recognized her from a small portrait her kinsman, the Duke of Athol, had shown him. It had been he who suggested the match when Broderick went to him asking for assistance. All he could say was that the colours and lines, while capturing the outer semblance of her, did not come close to showing her in her true form. She was overwhelmingly beautiful, and he had not expected it. As he sat there, fighting to control the fire that she lit inside him, the shouting finally registered.
"My lord, the castle is under attack!"
Broderick turned to the man in the door, chainmail damp from the drizzle, eyes wide. Lord Brian was already standing.
"Explain this disturbance,"
he demanded, eyes blazing.
"Lord, the sentry, he saw raiders."
Lady Amabel, she could be in danger. Without further warning, Broderick walked briskly from the dais. He went straight toward her and grabbed her wrist.
"Her bones are as slender as withies."
He could feel the pulse below the pearl-pale skin. Her eyes widened in shock. This close, they were blue and grey mixed, the lashes long, dewy lips enticing.
"Lord Broderick!"
"Hush!"
he said briskly. He dragged her with him as he ran to the doorway, the one behind her. He reached it and pushed her through. She stared up at him, face flushed, lips parted. She was angry.
"What do you think you're doing?"
"Saving your life,"
he said grimly. She spun round angrily, red hair whirling as she did so. He kept his grip on her wrist, and a soft flutter of her pulse reached through his fingertips to stir something in his heart.
"I don't need you to save me," she said angrily. "Not in a castle full of soldiers."
He sighed.
"My lady, soldiers can be overpowered. Your best hope is to run now. Take a horse and leave."
She turned back and glanced into the hall. Broderick looked with her. All around them, the hall had erupted into noise, men asking what the matter was, and ladies standing from their places, some gathering smaller children. Servants running, panicked, to the doors to the courtyard. Screams and shouts and feet on flagstones, slipping on the rushes in their haste to escape the hall. Broderick leaned toward her in the archway. He felt her slim thigh against his, and stiffened, trying to control his raging thoughts.
"Stop it! You just met her!"
He had never felt such an instant connection to anyone. He fought to control himself.
"It must be her hair. It reminds me of Aisling."
Aisling had died, and this time he had a chance to save her.
"Run!"
he whispered.
"My lady, for yourself and for me. Do not stay. Run!"
She turned toward the door.
"Run!"
As she ran, he heard her uncle shout.
"I demand an explanation. What is the meaning of this?"
Amabel stopped running. Everyone in the hall froze where they were, waiting to hear whatever he had to say. Broderick wanted to scream. She had almost run away. A pox on her uncle. Amabel had hesitated where she was in the hallway, red gold hair swinging as she turned, a wing of tawny satin. Even though he wanted to grab her hand, pull her through the door, he felt rooted to the spot. He could look nowhere else. She was beautiful.
caught in that...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?